Earl of Southampton. The Earl and his wife had found her spirited and indignant approach to incarceration rather tiresome, and had been glad when she was moved on. In the Tower, Margaret was able to write letters to her relatives and was provided with servants and good, expensive food. Her nobility was not demeaned. Earlier in the year, Queen Catherine's tailor had been appointed to make her a set of new clothes, and just a few weeks previously, another order of garments had turned up, ordered and paid for directly by the king. Henry had also sent her a nightgown lined with fur, and another with Cypriot satin, petticoats, bonnets and hose, four pairs of shoes, and a new pair of slippers. More than £15, roughly the equivalent of 2 years' wages for a common labourer at the time, had been spent on her clothing in just 6 months. As she walked out into the cool morning air, Margaret Pole could therefore have reflected that, although she was due to be beheaded that morning, she would at least die wearing new shoes. Her execution had been arranged in a hurry. She had been informed only hours previously that her nephew, the king, had ordered her death, a shockingly short time for an old lady to prepare her spirit and body for the end. According to a report that reached Eustace Chapuis, the exceptionally well-informed imperial ambassador to England, the Countess found the thing very strange, since she had no idea of what crime she was accused, nor how she had been sentenced. Few, in truth, would ever quite understand what threat this feeble old lady could have posed to a king as powerful and self-important as Henry VIII. A thin crowd had gathered to bear witness. They stood by a pathetically small chopping block, erected so hastily that it was simply set on the ground and not, as was customary, raised up on a scaffold. According to Chapuis, when Margaret arrived before the block, she commended her soul to her Creator and asked those present to pray for King Henry and Queen Catherine, the king's 3-year-old son, Prince Edward, and the 25-year-old Princess Mary, her goddaughter. But as the old woman stood talking to the sparse crowd, Chapuis put the number at 150, the French ambassador, Charles de Marillac, suggested it was fewer. A feeling of restlessness went around. She was told to hurry up and place her neck on the little piece of wood. The Tower's regular executioner wasn't on duty that morning. He was in the north alongside King Henry, who had visited the farthest reach of his kingdom to dampen the threat of a rebellion against his rule. The Tower's axe had therefore been entrusted to a deputy, a man of tender years and little experience in the difficult art of decapitation. Chapuis described him as a wretched and blundering youth. He was faced with a task wildly inappropriate to his years. Only one other noblewoman had been executed in England since the Norman conquest, the king's second wife, Anne Boleyn. She had been beheaded in a single stroke with a sword by a specially imported French executioner. This was not that, and the hapless executioner knew it. When the signal was given to strike, he brought the weapon down toward the block. But he botched the job. Rather than cutting cleanly through Margaret's neck in one stroke, he slammed the axe's blade into the old woman's shoulders and head. She didn't die. He brought the axe down again and missed again. It took several more blows to dispatch her, a barbarous assault in which the inept axeman literally hacked the old woman's upper body to pieces. It was a foul and cruel butchery that would shock everyone who heard of it. "May God in his high grace pardon her soul," wrote Chapuis, "for certainly she was a most virtuous and honourable lady." Margaret Pole was at one level just another casualty of the religious wars that dominated the 16th century, in which followers of the old faith, Roman Catholicism, and various splinter groups of the new